disperse immediately or you will be subject to arrest with now.
A boss ain't nothing but a thief on a time loan. 128 bit war, you play Nintendo on some shooter, so put the bridge down and feed us to the killer bees. We get what we deserve, life. Bury me with my MP3s. Write my manifesto in 72 DPI. Life's just a game, you got cheated, never learn. I write these songs every bridge that ain't been burned. For every cop car that ain't.
Welcome to This Is America, July 29th, 2018. Today we'll be wading through the latest Trump news, updates on large anti-fascist mobilizations, the latest developments in Occupy ICE, some inspiring examples of proletarian crime, and finally, a look at climate change and the growing crisis of wildfires, rising temperatures in modern cities. In this episode, we're lucky enough to be joined by somebody at Occupy ICE encampment in Philadelphia, as they discuss the news that the movement forced the state into granting a huge concession, as well as longtime anti-civilization anarchist and writer Kevin Tucker, who talks with us on climate change, heat, wildfires, and beyond. This week, the heat has turned up once again on Trump, largely centered around the Mueller investigation, as well as Trump's former lawyer saying that he will now testify against Trump and the fact that he produced a recording of himself and Trump discussing how to pay off yet another Playboy model to keep their affair a secret. Moreover, big financial movers and shakers from within the Trump Organization, such as the CFO of the Trump Organization himself, have now been requested to testify about Trump's financial dealings, which may finally force Trump to release his tax returns.
Liberals, get ready.
However, if recent polls are to be believed, most Americans could really not give a fuck. Probably because our lives are going to shit regardless of what happens with Trump's disgusting orange ass. Moreover, while the mainstream press distracts us with talks of Playboy models, Trump continues to push towards nuclear war with everybody from Iran to North Korea. Also, Trump predictably failed to reunite hundreds of undocumented children with their parents. As one report wrote, quote, "The deadline of Thursday, July 26, elapsed for the court-ordered reunification of more than 3,000 children separated from their parents, with the Trump administration declaring that at least 711 families were ineligible for reunification, affecting nearly 1,000 children. The administration now claims that it met the burden of the court order issued by District Judge Dana Sabra of the Southern District of California, but only by classifying these families as ineligible, it failed to reunify them." In economic news, some people are wondering if recent slumps of home sales in California will signal the start of another crash or economic recession, as slumps within the housing market have been known to indicate. In short, in California, home prices have continued to skyrocket while wages have fallen or stagnated. In response, a lot of people have simply stopped buying homes. In response, the market is now flooded with homes whose median price is now $500,000. In the meantime, more and more Americans live in poverty, exist paycheck to paycheck, and wealth continues to be concentrated in fewer and fewer hands. And speaking of wealth, $716 billion of those dollars which we created, that the government has taken from us through taxes, is now earmarked for the Pentagon's war machine, as a proposed new Pentagon package has now passed in the House of Representatives and is scheduled to go to vote in the Senate by August. At exactly the same time that idiots at Fox News start to roll out their talking points on the horrors of socialism, ironic that Bootlickers claims that we should only have the freedom to give the state our money for war, but not to ensure that we have access to things like healthcare or education. But beyond these cosmetic and often comedic reminders that those in power lie and manipulate their surroundings to ensure a variety of upper-class privileges and access to resources and power, Trump's trade war is having major impact on farmers, who largely voted for Trump across the country. In light of retaliatory tariffs being thrown at U.S. growers, many farmers have lost millions and will let many crops rot because they cannot export them. In response, the state rushed through billions of dollars in farmer aid, which amounts essentially to a bailout. In response, politicians on both sides are singing the praises of free trade and corporate globalization as Trump tries to carry out attacks on post-war manifestations of American capital and hegemony, from the World Trade Organization to the UN. What the failure of Trump's protectionism does show, though, is that capitalism in general is a system that can only succeed in accumulating wealth in a small amount of hands, while while wasting vast amounts of resources in extremely inefficient ways. Whether a so-called free trade model, which encourages countries to gut environmental labor and banking regulations and promote austerity to invite capital to come in across borders, or the protectionist one, which seeks to build an economic nationalist model and thus encourages simply the same degradation at home, capitalism is a failure across the board for the earth and those of us who labor under its reign. A true alternative would be instead of a mass system of trade and resource extraction based on non-renewable resources. Instead would be a localized, sustainable production of things that we human communities actually need, not what makes money in markets far away. Instead of a massive system of international commerce, we could have localized systems of non-industrialized production not based on fossil fuels that could work to meet our own needs, while engaging in mutual aid and solidarity on a global scale, coming to each other's aid in the spirit of common humanity. But such an alternative, a world without wage slavery and the private ownership of the means of existence, won't come through piecemeal reforms or through starting progressive businesses, but instead by the exploited and excluded taking over the means of existence from those that have them in their hands now. The Unite the Right number 2 rally in DC continues to plod forward. However, it seems that Jason Kessler, its main organizer, is finding it harder and harder to sign up anyone that actually wants to speak at his event. Also this week, anti-fascists released personal doxing information of the rally organizers. If you want to see a link to that, go to our show notes. Meanwhile, Pedro Pereira has announced that instead of rallying on the 4th at a federal park in Portland, they will instead rally close to the water, a move they pulled many times before. This will allow them to open carry with firearms, so if you're going to the event, please be safe. In a recent Facebook video, Gibson stated that the group has now acquired a set of small school buses that will be the future of how the organization carries out protests, meaning instead of relying on the police to escort them, they will now get on and off the bus in rapid time and be protected by armed guards. Meanwhile, Amber Cummings, the organizer of the Berkeley rally on August 5th, has launched a series of online tirades against the leader of the Sacramento Proud Boys, Gabe Silva, after Silva's comments on Facebook featured heavily in a Southern Poverty Law Center article about him wanting to engage in wanton violence. Cummings then claimed that American Guard, a violent white nationalist group that fought at Unite the Right, much like the Fraternal Order of White Knights led by Kyle Chapman, were not welcome at her event on the 5th, and thus she had no security for it. Not to be outdone, Proud Boys in the Bay Area made a separate Berkeley event, but then signaled that they were not coming to either. Amber also stated on social media that people might not want to come to her own event. Meanwhile, Joey Gibson stirred the pot even farther and stated that he was still planning on driving his buses down to Berkeley to the rallies despite everything that was going on. While the fascists are at each other's throats, anti-fascists and anarchists should remember that this is much the same thing that happened in 2017 in August. And in the end, they still attempted to show up, Joey Gibson included. So, stay the course. Currently, across the U.S. in August, anti-fascist mobilizations are growing, with more and more groups signing on to confront the far-right and the alt-right. Some interesting stories happened this week that involve straight-up destruction, brawling, and even theft on a massive scale. First off, someone took a pickaxe to Donald Trump's star on the Walk of Fame in Los Angeles. They were arrested, but then bailed out by somebody who had destroyed the same star with a pickaxe before them. How's that for prisoner support? Soon after, MAGA bootlickers ride around their favorite anti-globalist billionaire, while another crowd of anti-Trump human beings also gathered, leading to a violent brawl in the streets you can watch in our show notes. Not to be outdone, Idaho prisoners in one facility were able to hack JPay, an online payment processor for inmates, which forces them to pay for access to literally everything that they can access on a tablet, from looking at photos to answering emails. According to one article, inmates in five Idaho prisons exploited a vulnerability in their JPay tablets to steal almost $225,000 worth of credits, according to officials. The Idaho Department of Corrections said 364 prisoners boosted their JPay account balances, according to the Associated Press. The department unearthed the issue earlier this month and noted taxpayer dollars were not affected. Prisoners can use credits to buy music, ebooks, stamps to pay for email, inbound video messages, games, and even JPay tablets themselves. They can use the tablets to catch up on the news, access educational materials, and view photos and videos. Inmates' loved ones ones can also buy tablets for them and talk to the prisoners in a video chat session, which of course costs money. And now, resistance and repression news. In Tacoma, outside of the Northwest Detention Center, barricades have been placed up, which appears on social media to be blocking the entrance of the ICE Center. Yesterday, it appears the barricades were taken down by police, but as one person stated on social media, it makes more sense to put up these barricades to make the police stop working for several hours than it does to sacrifice people to be arrested. A member of the family that was resisting pipeline construction at Camp White Pine, which you might remember was on the It's Going Down podcast, is now unfortunately in jail. According to one article, Ellen, a retired special education teacher from Central Pennsylvania, is in jail tonight. This afternoon, four officers with the Huntington County Sheriff's Department arrived at the property to make the arrest, acting in response to a motion filed by Energy Transfer Partners. The pipeline company is notorious for the Dakota Access Pipeline. The company is claiming that the 63-year-old grandmother was baiting bears and mountain lions onto a pipeline easement the company established using eminent domain to take the family's land. There have been no sightings of mountain lions in Pennsylvania for 130 years. An Occupy ICE encampment has been launched in Sacramento, California. They are calling for support and more people. On Saturday, Sacramento police attempted to evict the occupation. However, there were enough people to hold them back. You can check out their Twitter and Facebook to see more about how to plug in. Check our show notes for links. Crowds gathered in northern Toledo after police shot and killed a 25-year-old man, Lamar Richardson, who was fleeing from police on a bike. Rowdy demonstrations also took place against the police in North Nashville after an officer pulled over Daniel Hambrick, or Dan Dan, and killed him. North Nashville police would claim that the vehicle they pulled Dan Dan over was stolen and also that he was armed. Later, it turned out that both of these things were false. Read the full report on Jam City Antifa, which will soon be up on It's Going Down. New York members of the Industrial Workers of the World, of the IWW, showed up in support and solidarity of their fellow union members who have been locked out by Grassroots Campaigns, a progressive canvassing company in Seattle. Members of the union talked with rank-and-file workers about the struggle in Seattle and how they have won an IWW union contract. Meanwhile, Wobblies in Seattle are now officially on strike against Grassroots Campaigns. Check them out on Facebook for day-to-day updates, which will soon be up on It's Going Down as well. An appeals court has canceled a permit that would allow the Mountain Valley Pipeline to be built on federal lands, siding with anti-pipeline resistance. Appalachians Against Pipeline on Twitter wrote, quote, "We don't know exactly what this means, although we can say with certainty that the fight isn't over. There hasn't been any mention yet of whether this decision will be enforced or what it will look like." People found destroyed and covered up racist graffiti, posters, and stickers in a variety of places. Check the show notes for pictures. And more anti-Mountain Valley Pipeline news, Appalachians Against Pipelines also reported, quote, "This morning, 30 or so Mountain Valley Pipeline work trucks were delayed for up to an hour. They were halted by a rolling blockade led by a couple of meandering cyclists taking in the sights near Craig Creek in Virginia." In a major victory for the Abolish ICE movement in Philadelphia, the mayor announced Friday, as Unicorn Riot reported that, quote, "He will not renew the city's contract to allow ICE access to the Philly Police's PAR system, or Preliminary Arrangement Reporting System, database. Revoking ICE access to PARs was the key demand of the Occupy ICE Philadelphia camp outside of City Hall. While the move by the mayor is seen as a success, the city government has also stated that the Occupy ICE Philadelphia encampment must be removed by Saturday. An update on the encampment on Twitter stated from Abolish ICE Philly, "The encampment has moved to Broadway and Arch Street next to municipal services. Powered almost entirely by black comrades who are also homeless, the Occupy ICE encampment will work to end stop and frisk, shut down Burks, and abolish ICE." See our interview with somebody on the ground for more information later in the program. In Detroit, people were able to pull off a five-hour blockade of an ICE facility. People wrote on Twitter, quote, "After five-hour blockade of the Detroit ICE field office, DHS busted up the camp. Fortunately, there were no arrests." In Chicago, protests and pickets continued against a censor who is profiting nearly $3 million taxpayer dollars to facilitate surveillance, deportation, detainment, kidnapping, and rape of people of color at or near the U.S.-Mexican border. Banner drops took place in New York, the Northwest, and Gainesville, Florida, against ICE and in favor of the prison strike. In Georgia, it was reported that someone threw a sledgehammer through the windows of the local Republican Party office. In Massachusetts, inmates, after learning of a hunger strike by ICE prisoners, launched a hunger strike in solidarity. As one report wrote, quote, "Inmates at the Bristol County House of Corrections in North Dartmouth began a hunger strike Tuesday evening in solidarity with ICE detainees," says Bristol County Sheriff Thomas Hodson. Hodson says 71 inmates refused dinner Tuesday night, and another 35 inmates joined them in refusing breakfast Wednesday morning. ICE detainees in Bristol County were on hunger strike last week in protest of lack of medical care, horrible food, and other alleged abuses. The sheriff says news coverage of these strikes led inmates and general population to refuse meals this week to show their support. Actions and shutdowns of the BioBridge pipeline continue despite continued arrests and repression, and also the removal of tree sitters. You can check our show notes for action tweets. Across the world, on July 25th, people held events and took action in support of longtime anti-fascist prisoners. This ranged from people writing letters in different events to dropping banners. You can see our show notes for a collection of action around the world. People are still gearing up for the prison strike that's set to kick off on August 21st as actions and hunger strikes kick off inside prisons. Groups like RAM, or the Revolutionary Abolitionist Movement, are holding regular get-togethers to write and send letters into the prison. Check our show notes for some inspiring pictures of the work they're putting in, and please get involved yourself. In Tampa, Florida, far right-wing Trump supporters showed up outside of the Occupy ICE encampment to hold a protest. Meanwhile, Patriot Prayer and Proud Boys also showed up at the Occupy ICE in Portland encampment to harass people as they were shutting down the camp. By Saturday, this tactic by the far right had spread to San Antonio, where the neo-Nazi group Patriot Front, a rebranding of Vanguard America, the group whose member James Alex Field is suspected of murdering Heather Heyer at Unite the Right in Charlottesville, attacked the encampment outside of an ICE facility there, spending several minutes basically knocking over a tent and some water coolers before finishing their photo op and hightailing it out of a parking lot. See the report by Kit O'Connell, a radical journalist on the ground, on It's Going Down in his own website for more information about what all happened. In Chicago, No Cop Academy held a blockade, and neo-Nazis with Identity Europa, one of the key white nationalist groups which have continued to go on after Unite the Right, were driven out of Comic-Con in San Diego by a group of anti-fascist and anti-racist convention attendees. Members of IE were driven out of the event and were followed for upwards of 1 mile. You can see a humorous video of this comical interaction in our show notes. We do want to mention, however, that Identity Europa did spend the last several days carrying out some larger actions in New York. They dropped banners, and also they held a rally outside the Mexican consulate. These groups are continuing to organize, they're continuing to mobilize, and they're also organizing off of Discord, so it's making it harder for people to track what they're doing. So it's time again to step up surveillance, intelligence gathering of these organizations, and continue to outmaneuver and outorganize them.
Pablo, a man held by ICE, was finally released to his family in New York after weeks of protest. He was captured by ICE while working as a pizza delivery man. In Louisville, Kentucky, police have managed to shut down the Occupy ICE encampment. However, it appears that a new one is setting up currently. Meanwhile, Occupy ICE LA continues, and new events are being organized throughout the weekend. Check them out. That's going to do it for us for now. So go out and make some more news for us to talk about on Monday. We will see you soon.
What's going on in Philadelphia these days?
Well, my name is Trinae Jones, and there's quite a few things going on in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
So, just to get started, right now I'm fighting for PARS, so I don't know exactly what you're asking about, but that was our main thing up until today when PARS was ended.
Yeah, do you just want to explain to people what PARS was and how did that tie into Occupy ICE in Philadelphia?
Well, the simplest way to put it would be that PARS is the establishment that they do ICE through. Yes, So do you know what PARSE is?
I've read a little bit about it. I know it's like a database that shares information for the police or something like that around immigration.
So basically, PARSE is the preliminary arraignment reporting system. It's a preliminary arraignment reporting system. What that basically means is that what that basically means is that they are the system, like DHS or the government. They are the system that allows ICE to even exist.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have FERC, which is the encampment that they send these people to after that process has been finished.
Right.
So there's PARSE, and then there's ICE, and then there's FERC. I fight for, like, people, humans in general, and children in cages. The FERC County is really just an illegal camp. It's a concentration camp. They send children to, as if we live with Hitler. Melt the ICE is one of our models, because ICE is a part of the police. None of this would be legal without ICE being a part of the police. They're literally allowed to go looking for immigrants to arrest them, to send them to a place that most of them have never been, that some of them are refugees from.
Right.
So we're asking for it to be shut down. Berks is literally a modern day concentration camp. And if people don't understand how scary that is, I don't know how to put it.
Yeah. How do you feel about the decision today that they're going to end that that information sharing program for PARSE?
So, for PARSE to be the overall establishment that allows them to even be able to do their job, I love the fact that PARSE is ended, because for what it stands for, it is literally what keeps ICE going. It is literally what keeps Briggs County going. So the faster that we got PARSE out of the way, is the faster that we can get kids out of cages.
Mm-hmm. And then they're saying that they're going to give the encampment there 24 hours to get out of there. Is that what they're saying?
It's pretty disgusting, but yes. So every day we fight for human rights, basic rights, and they don't even give a shit about what we're here for. They say, y'all have 24 hours to get out. And that's bullshit. It's not even 24 hours. They're giving us until the morning.
Yeah. How many people are down there right now?
If you want me to tell you how many people I'm looking at, it's 30 people on my left and it's 30 people on my right.
Yeah. And how did... are people committed to staying out there, or are they going to try to go somewhere else? What's the general plan?
Half the people want to stay here. The other half of the people can't stay here.
Yeah.
So tomorrow, what's going to happen is we're going to have to decamp. We're going to have to, you know, start all over somewhere else. But for right now, we're still trying to get it together, because they only gave us 24 hours. I just believe that for us to be standing up for everything that we believe in, that this is pretty absurd of them to even give us a specific amount of time. A lot of people feel safe here. We wish to, you know, continue our protest, because it's not just a protest. This is a movement. It's about life. It's about the world that we live in. So there's absolutely no reason for us to even have to close camp, but it won't be safe after today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, for anybody in Philadelphia listening to this, what would you say to them?
I would tell them to come. Anybody in Philadelphia, I would tell them to come here. Mm-hmm. I would tell them to understand that ICE is basically the giant version of DHS. They take people's kids. They don't give them back. They put them in camps. They treat them like shit. And it's legal. They go into people's homes to take humans, to take grown people my age and your age, and to leave the humans to cry because they came in and took their kids.
Yeah.
To put them in concentration camps, and for it to all be legal, for it to go through the mayor, for the mayor to just decide that he was going to end it today, y'all not understand that we are the change? We are the people. We ended it today because we have been here for a month. I want people in Philadelphia to know that you are the change. Yeah. I don't want to hear that bullshit about, oh, you're not going to make a difference. Nobody can do shit. All of us being out here is what it is today. Every day, a white guy, a black guy, an immigrant is mad at me. Y'all the specific people that's not supposed to be mad at me. I'm out here. Those cops is out here wasting people's tax money. Like people out here talking about fuck my protest. We also stop frisk. People drive by every day and say all kinds of ignorant mess. Why? We standing out here for human basic rights. Human basic needs. And right now it's for immigrants. But through and through, it's for everybody.
Right.
This country was built on immigrants. There's no reason that the rest of the city shouldn't be out here standing with me right now.
Well, thanks so much for joining us, and best of luck to y'all, and stay safe.
Thank you.
Okay, we're joined here today with Kevin Tucker, a fellow member of the Channel Zero Podcast Network, and also one of the editors of the Black and Green Review, which is an anarcho-primitivist and green anarchist publication that you should definitely check out. We're going to be talking about what's been going on with these wildfires in the past few weeks. We've seen record heat waves and high temperatures. While this is not uncommon during the summer at all, it is something to note and also to talk about how it's connected to climate change. So far this summer, all these incidents have led to loss of life and also rolling blackouts as heat waves knock out various electrical grids and internet technology in large cities. Actually, while we were planning to do this interview today, the internet where this is being recorded was knocked out. Also in Japan, California, Greece have all been hit hard. In Sweden, we saw wildfires this week get all the way up to the Arctic Circle. And in Montreal, the heat wave has filled the city morgue to capacity. So, Kevin, just looking at all this stuff, what are your initial thoughts on all of these different things that's happening so far in the past couple of weeks?
You were warned. There's not really a great way to spin it, and there's nothing about having seen how these patterns develop and seeing how these things have played out in the past and extrapolating that towards the future is comforting at all. I mean, it's going to keep getting worse. And this is the problem that we've been having. And I think a lot of it gets tied to, you know, or the shock of it, or the feeling that like, okay, this is something we couldn't have seen. This is something we couldn't have predicted. It comes down to the idea of control, which is a central part of just agrarian and civilized existence. And really what we're seeing is, you know, this is the end of the Holocene. And we've, because of climate change, because of rapid shifts and climate patterns and massive impacts we're having and die-offs, this is how it unfolds. And it's been going on for a while. I mean, people talk about the Arab Spring and want to say how a lot of that stuff, it's like paid attention to like, oh, the role technology played in organizing people. It's like the bigger story here was how climate change impacted food prices. And that's what caused the initial revolts and initial resistance. And you get everything that's happening in Syria and the Middle East, and you have it all throughout the world. I mean, the entire idea of borders and nations and everything like that is going to be just, I mean, this is something we've known. It's going to continually become more and more ridiculous as the ability to maintain any kind of order in any one area and to be built upon predictive patterns is going to continue quickly withering away. And that's what we're seeing. And it's gnarly.
I mean, one of the things for myself that really struck me, and I don't know why I didn't really get this before, but I mean, I think most people, when they think about, you know, heat waves, you know, record breaking temperatures, they don't think about its effect on, you know, the electrical grid or technology or something like that. And obviously, if you pack a bunch of people, like I was reading an article about some city in India where, you know, it was record breaking heat waves, and then all of a sudden, you know, the power goes out, and then everybody's stuck in this concrete jungle. And, you know, most people, I think when they think about how hot it is, you know, you just go out and you buy an air conditioner or a fan, but then all of a sudden the power goes out and everybody's stuck, you know, in a city. And I just think, you know, we're obviously going to see much more of that. And also we'll see, more and more race to just, you know, get more and more AC units everywhere. because, you know, the hotter it gets, the more air conditioning people want. But that's just going to add to the problem, because then you're going to have even, you know, more power being used, and then all of a sudden it's going to shut off because of the heat.
Yeah. So, I mean, the entire way that things work, and people tend to think of a city and the concrete as having kind of overcome nature and overcome ecology and overcome wildness, but it's not how it works. And concrete, it's a feedback loop. And there's nothing in this world that doesn't apply to ecological cycles. And when you go into a city, the tall buildings and stuff like that can greatly impact the way that the winds blow and how that works. But I mean, the AC thing is a huge thing, and it comes down to getting kind of put into this impossible situation where you just realize, and nobody wants to go into this level of detail about it, this is the innately unsustainable nature of civilization, especially technological civilization. And it becomes a tough point. A lot of people say, it's like, well, why shouldn't these people have AC? It's like, well, really, the entire system is just going to fall apart. And it might be, and it certainly is becoming apparent, that large portions of occupied land are no longer going to be, capable of supporting life as it has. And that's a big situation that's going to be cause for a lot of movement going forward. Mm-hmm. The crazy thing about it is, like, this is how humans got through the ice ages, is we were resilient enough to be able to move. And now we're like, well, we've got borders, so we can't do that. It's like, well, yeah, then you see what happens when you buy AC units. You see what happens when you continue increasing the electrical output, and everything we do is just a magnitude untold before in the entirety of human civilization, or the entirety of civilization. Just the consumption of energy, and that energy itself causing climatic shifts, which technology just exacerbates. So it's like population; it expands exponentially. And all the devices we're using, the fact that villages that never had phone lines are having fiber optic cables, the threshold for electricity just keeps on skyrocketing. We have this complete disconnect where even people who are like, oh, I've got an electric car, it doesn't hurt the earth. It's like, where does that electricity come from? What are you thinking?
Right. What coal-burning plant is producing the electricity?
It's the green electricity in your wonderful car.
Right. Well, speaking of fossil fuels, I want to turn now to an article that we've mentioned before on This Is America, but in Grist, which is a sort of progressive eco news site. They wrote about the meeting between Putin and Trump that's been all over the news, and I'm sure most people have heard about it. But they were talking about the connection between the fossil fuel industry and also Trump and Putin. And I'm just going to read a quote from the article. It says, fossil fuels still power 80% of the world's economy, and the leaders of that dying industry might start acting in desperation to starve off its decline. Russia is a petrol state, and the U.S. is now too. In fact, the two countries are the world's largest non-OPEC oil producers, extracting nearly as much as all OPEC countries combined. By working together, they can keep the global economy swimming in oil and gas. I'm just curious, you know, your thoughts. I mean, as I'm sure you're seeing all this stuff about, you know, ad nauseum about Trump and Putin and, you know, collusion within the economy, there doesn't seem to be any mention of, you know, I mean, Trump's project is very much, as this article points out, you know, petrol state.
Yeah, I mean, this is, but he's not necessarily wrong in thinking that's how it was in the United States. That's how it has been, and that's how it's been building up. I mean, fracking all happened under Obama, and the only reason that it declined at the end there is because the power play between natural gas, liquefied natural gas, and OPEC. And as soon as the price of oil per barrel dropped below $50 or $55 per barrel, then the viability of natural gas is just completely diminished. Hydraulic fracturing is just insanely costly, and it's a shill game. And the bubble was exceptionally quick, but, you know, it feeds money into the kind of douchebag that Trump surrounds him with, and Obama did as well, but like on a different degree. They're just, you know, a lot more obvious about it. And the concerning thing is, as well, is, you know, seeing some of the stuff they're talking about doing. It's all about these shaker machines they're talking about sending up into the Arctic for doing exploration work. It's just massive amounts of sonar, all the wildlife that is already being threatened in these areas, and even possibly the viability of ice sheets could be under attack in a way that we hadn't really seen on the scale that they want to do it. And so you get this kind of situation where you can even look like a situation in Norway and Scandinavia, where, you know, you get this kind of crazy cycle where climate change is heating up areas, which is reducing the ice, which means that more areas are now being open for gas exploration. So that's why you have this massive exodus on behalf of Finland, Norway, and Sweden to push the Sami away from being herders. So nobody's paying attention to the coast where they want to drill more oil. And then, you know, it just creates this complete cycle. And, you know, it's one of those things where it shouldn't be surprising. And, you know, Trump is awful. I mean, he's you know, just scum. And Putin obviously the same. But to think that this is necessarily a complete change in policy or a complete change in how any of this has ever worked is just wrong. And it's not. I mean, they're much more obvious about it, you know, and they were ramping up more protections for Anwar in some ways. But, you know, I mean, even the Keystone XL, like, Obama could have done more to make sure that that was going to be stopped. And it's possible Trump was going to do what he did anyways and just turn around and make it easier for all that stuff to go through. But the entire thing comes back to the spectacle. I mean, this is a, you know, kind of determined as the situation has had it, except now it's the capitalists have been realized that they can just do the same. And you can create so much stir around all the sheer visceral insanity of Trump, and then the right. excesses of all these, you know, Scott Pruitt and Zinke and all these douchebags, and not pay attention to what's actually happening. And that's right. working really, really well.
Do you think that, I mean, a lot of the people in the Trump administration that are close to Trump that are tied to the oil industry, or, you know, in some cases like ex-CEOs, do you think in their minds that they think that there is, you know, like the car, people talk about, like, you know, the bubble around oil and gas, that basically they have to get as much as they can now because at some point people will pull out because of climate change? Because, I mean, everything that I see does not point to that direction. It doesn't seem like the system is preparing to, you know, pull out anytime soon. I mean, 80% of the world's economy is based around fossil fuels. You know, 50% of the oil and gas is used by the U.S. military. I mean, it's got a huge, you know, trillion infusion from the Pentagon. I mean, it doesn't seem to be going away anytime soon.
I mean, nobody ever got rich for being an altruist. I mean, it's just the nature of it. Like, all these people, we want to kind of ascribe these ideas that they are smarter than they are. And there are a lot of things. I mean, so we talked about in Black and Green Review, I think a while ago, there was an HSBC Bank shareholder video that circulated. It was on the lowdown. It wasn't getting pushed around the news, but it's publicly available. And they were talking about how, you know, this is a massive bank telling people that the long-term viability of natural energy or oil and gas for stakeholders was ill-advised. And you know, there's varying degrees of it, and you can see, and there always has been this case point to show that these industries have done enough research to know the long-term viability doesn't matter, but none of these CEOs are going to live long enough to really care that much. So you might get like a microcosm of like these people saying, oh, we need to be thinking ahead, we need to be thinking ahead. But realistically, it's a shell game to the end, and that's what you're seeing. And even with, you know, when OPEC shifted back the price of oil per barrel, I don't even want to know, like 2014 or something like that. It was, you know, people said, it's like, oh, look, there's a glut of oil on the market. It's like, no, they could just drop the price and then shift it. It's like these industries despise each other. I mean, they're capitalists. They're cutthroat. Like there's nothing about it that's like, there's just this club of rich people that, you know, I'm sure they get along, and it is a country club we're literally describing here, but like they get along and things like that. But when it comes to business and when it comes to being rich, somebody's always richer and they always want to get that. And that's just how far they're thinking. And they're insanely malicious and they're insanely maniacal in the way that they do things and the way they operate and the way that they talk about it. But they're not smart. I mean, they're just viciously awful excuses for a human being. Right. And well, I mean, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I was going to go on switch gears here to another point. This article in The Guardian that's come out, speaking of people in the upper class or elites being smart. And there was a recent article that came out, believe today, about somebody that goes to a conference and they're speaking about technology in the future. And basically they learn as they give their talk that the conference is basically about, the end of the world. And how are these the people there describe it as the event, which is a euphemism for environmental collapse, social unrest, nuclear explosion. But basically they're talking about how technology will be used to basically protect elites or to subdue the population. And I think that's something we come back again and again on this podcast, is that it's so bizarre that it seems like the elites in some ways do not have a self-preservation built into them. But on the other hand, I think, as this article points out, I mean, they are thinking about, all these things that are going on in the world, and they're thinking about escape. And I'm just going to read really quickly from this article. They knew that armed guards would be required to protect their compounds from angry mobs. But how would they pay the guards once the money was worthless? What would stop the guards from choosing their own leader? The billionaires considered using special combination locks on the food supply, only they knew, or making guards wear disciplinary collars of some kind in return for their survival, or maybe building robots to serve as guards and workers, if that technology could be developed in time. And, I mean, it's just... It's a crazy article. We'll link to it in the show notes, but I don't know. I'm just curious your thoughts. I mean, hearing, these people, I'm sure you've seen the film Elysium, which is kind of along these lines, but
yeah, it's hilarious to me. I mean, anytime that you can get that look behind the curtain, you see rich people are just like, everyone's, people want to get rich. That's how this society works. It's the whole game, and they don't see that, like, at no point does the misery stop. It's just the more you get, the worse you get. And, for them, that's what it comes down to. Somebody's always richer. And so the Guardian article you're talking about came out yesterday. And, just for reference, I hope people read it because it is fascinating on an anthropological level. But this conference was five billionaires, hedge fund billionaires, sitting around a table asking, how do I stay rich? So it's not like there's this massive thing, but there is the same kind of thing that you see with, like, the Silicon Valley billionaires who are just ridiculously insane. And, like Kurzweil or some people like that, I think it takes like 200 vitamins a day. Steve Jobs was the same. It helped a whole lot, you can see. But like, they've got this idea that they're so rich that they beat the system. They're going to conquer death. And from a biological angle, it's fascinating to see people kind of like scamper around. This is our version of watching a rat in a maze, except, the maze has shock collars for us instead. But, there's these ideas, and we've always kind of come across this, like as anarcho-primitivists and talking about the collapse and everything like that. People always want to say, it's like, well, this is a first world fantasy. And it's like, well, no, obviously, as you look around the world, if you look in the news every single day, this is more of a third and fourth world reality on a very real, visceral level. But the idea that having money means you're going to survive means you think that money has innate value, which it doesn't. And that the entirety of all this stuff, and the entirety of capitalism, is just a series of bubbles and bubbles and bubbles. And there's some bubbles that last a lot longer than others, and some bubbles that make enough money that they can keep kind of coming along. You get legacy billionaires, and they can lead to these psychotic kind of things. And you get hedge fund billionaires, which are super bubbles. And those are the kind of people who have probably seen either some degree of their bubble bursting or some threat of their friend's bubble bursting fast enough that they're like, well, how do I get a guard to protect me?
But I think that's what's really crazy, is that they're saying, like, there could come a time when, money does not matter anymore because it simply doesn't exist. So therefore, how can we, reproduce the conditions of class society, which ensure that I have leverage either through violence or through the taking of resources and then rationing them out to people to ensure obedience? I mean, it's like, at no point do they say, like, we could probably still be very rich and, take these resources that we have and actually try to do something to help to ensure that maybe we don't live in this, end up in this dystopian world. They're like, no, fuck that. We're going to, you know, stay the course and hopefully end up, you know, I don't know, the Eye of Sauron in Mordor somewhere at the end of the day. It's really crazy and scary.
Well, for those who are listening who think that they can conquer death, from what I understand, the cleanest way to preserve your head for cryogenic freezing is a decapitation, a surgical procedure, and having your head frozen immediately, but you want to be in your prime so they can keep your head. So if you're concerned at all and you happen to be a millionaire or a billionaire or just a boss of any kind in preserving yourself, you want to decapitate yourself as soon as possible to get your head in the freezer before the power goes out. And if you're thinking about joining Elon Musk and going to Mars, just try it. Just hop on a rocket. I'm as eager as you are to have you off this planet. And right. The sooner you go, the better. And as much as I'd like to see how these shock collars plan out in a collapse scenario, I suspect that they won't work. And you can so the correlation I always like to make is when you look at the Mayan collapse, and this is before European conquest and everything like that. In some of these areas where the temples were abandoned and everybody, you know, the civilization is just over, they did what they do. They collapse. They push themselves past the point of diminishing returns, and they can no longer, the people in power can no longer convince the people that they had working for them that it worked to their benefit. So they left. But in the case of the Mayan temples, there's a lot of times where they found that there's this ritualistic throne that the king sat upon. And those were always smashed on the way out. And it's like at a certain point, it's 100% symbolic. It has no physical meaning. Nothing about that bench kept anybody in line. But somebody's like, you know what? Before I go, here it is. I mean, it's like when you upper deck your boss on the way out of quitting. Like, just a big fuck you. Here you go. Right. You know, good luck with your shot collars. And, you know, make sure to keep your head as cleanly decapitated as possible for cryogenic purposes.
I mean, you know, just so for, I mean, people that are in cities, I mean, you brought up that we're going to see waves and waves of climate refugees, and this is something that's been talked about in a Black and Green Review. But I mean, you know, my question is, like, if you're in a city, should you think about leaving, or what would your what would your advice be, you know, looking at the situation? Because I know that you've thought and written about these things for a long time.
Did that feel like a question when it came out? Of course. So my answer is like always yes. Leave the cities. Like, a city is a artificial death trap. And it creates a microcosm where you can believe that all biological principles and rules don't apply. And I've had this conversation with people, especially anarchists, over and over again. And I say it's like civilization is like 95% maintenance, maybe 5% innovation, and innovation is even a stretch. Like, and people are like, well, you know, if you let a building sit, it'll just stay there. It's like, no, like, not at all. There's, I think New York City last year had 5,000 industrial applications of Roundup and glyphosate sprayed in all city streets just to maintain. And that's an insane level of ecological wretchedness and biological wretchedness, but it's all to create this illusion that, you know, here's the space where, hey, we won and that's how it goes. But there's no safe haven there. And I mean, I hate being in cities personally, but I always prefer, if I'm going to be one, it was easy to be in a city like Pittsburgh because you can just go very easily. There's always like an escape route. And it made me feel a little less panic, but like, you know, this is going to continue to get worse. And you know, I think it's important for a lot of reasons, and I think building communities and really digging in on resilience and what it means to be alive for every possible reason is important. But at the very least, like, you know, your life is so controlled in the city, and that's just how it's supposed to work, and it's how it's supposed to keep your view and your range of vision so limited. But they'll keep getting worse, and it blows my mind. You know, I mean, I should just say, it's like you look at pictures of Syria, and we get so used to hearing about Syrian refugees. And then, of course, you know, there's the drop-pounding fucking asshole racist nationalists that are like, that's their problem. They should just stay there and deal with it. It's like, look at those cities. Look at what they actually look like. Get on your computer, take a look at these cities, and you tell me how any life can be sustained there. This has been bombing campaigns, and this whole region has been bombing campaigns for so long. And then if we can't even look at that situation at a distance and be like, oh shit, that's the future, that's the present, this is what's happening right now. Like, mm-hmm. if we just get out of our heads and realize that as a globalized civilization, this is all the same. This is all connected. This is all completely tied. Then we can stop thinking that, like, we're exempt from that. And, mm-hmm. you know, just talking about the and things in Black Green Review, the grid refugees was a concept that was put out there, and I think is great and it's an important one. You know, the idea that addiction to electricity and subservience to electricity is going to create this new power dynamic, the new more literal shock collar, if you will, that, you know, people will kind of keep following along for longer than they should just to kind of maintain this relationship with the grid. But, you know, I saw this statistic yesterday. Within 15 years, there are 4,000 miles of fiber optic cables that are buried offshore to keep the, you know, the cloud is very much a real thing, and above, below ground. But 4,000 miles of fiber optic cable in the next 15 years are going to be washed up and washed out ashore because of rising waters. So, I mean, like, just you know, something we take as so ever-present as, you know, the if you're in a city, the availability of Wi-Fi, the availability of fiber optic 4G, and hopefully never 5G. It's all so fragile. And, you know, as we've seen it, if you look at human history, if you look before human history, completely subject to change in ways that this very minute portion of our global empire has existed. It's just not going to stay that way. And as huge portions of the world are literally on fire and people are literally dying because of the heat.
On the positive side, I think that also means that, I mean, you know, this system survives off fossil fuels, but, you know, it can't teleport those fossil fuels. It has to be transported. You know, police cars run out of fuel. So do cities and everything else. And, you know, those things can easily be blockaded and shut down. I think, you know, as Occupy ICE has shown, you know, these are encampments of largely like 15, 20 people, and they're doing significant damage in some instances, stopping entire cities from, you know, entire regions of states from being able to deport people. And I think that as things continue, people have to really start thinking about taking that logic of blockading and shutting down and applying it to the fossil fuel industry.
Yeah, and I have to say I was not impressed with the Occupy movement, but like stuff like Occupy ICE, I mean, that actually gives me hope. I mean, I think that, you know, really I think it can't be overstated that if you're looking at resources, the internet has to be understood as a resource, and not just because that's how commerce happens, but that's how communication happens, and that's how social media happens. And, you know, you and I have talked about this before, but the entire nature of the way that the world has been moving in this hyper-reactive way to a very ecological reality of shifting climates or in climate instability. And, you know, again, the complete and sheer ridiculousness of borders it has been this kind of just drum-beating reductionism and upholding just horribly dated ideas for incredibly colonial and violent imperialistic means, such as border enforcement, national enforcement. But it's this, it's you see nationalism. Nationalism doesn't come about because a country is particularly proud. A country comes up, nationalism and any kind of xenophobic stuff, it exists solely when the basis of the identity of that group is no longer as clear cut. Because the internet connects everybody throughout the world at all times, the entire idea of identity is being kind of washed away. And the reactive stance to that is, well, this is who I am. I am an American. And that's why you can see people talking online like, well, why don't you support the troops? It's like, because they're in fucking Malaysia. Like, it's the internet. Everybody has access. Like, you're not, your world is bigger than this. And your impact is much bigger than this. And so, you know, I mean, it takes a lot more than just arguing with people and just taking to the streets and fighting these things, which I'm not saying they shouldn't do, just that, like, if we're not looking at the deeper issues, if we're not trying to understand not only what it means to be in a fossil fuel dependent industrial globalized civilization and the impacts that has upon both the natural world and the artificial versions of it, but also, you know, what it takes to fuel that and how it's sustained through this kind of mythos, and how that mythos is spread again through the machine, and the more we identify and interact through the machine, the more we're just taking part in it. And it's hard to step back and say, like, I'm going to just avoid that, the technology, because somebody's got to stand up to these people. It's like, we need to be looking at the same thing. And that's how the most effective resistance that have ever taken place in the history of the world are mostly going to be the indigenous resistance to civilization at the frontier level. And the way that those groups stood, and the way that a lot of those groups have sustained themselves, is they had a sense of identity. They had a sense of place. They knew who they were. They knew what they were fighting for. It wasn't ideological. It was a feeling. It was something that they had actually known. It was a grounded connection with the world and something worth defending. And then it was made it possible because they were self-sufficient to be able to look at a colonial force as invaders and see where the lifelines are. And all the things that make transportation possible fill the modes of transportation with flammable liquids. And if we start looking at bottlenecks and start understanding how these things work and start understanding how the entirety of it spreads as a system, then it makes it a lot more possible to start looking at ways to strangle it.
This has been the It's Going Down podcast. Check itsgoingdown.org for daily updates, columns, action reports, and news. Go to itsgoingdown.org/shop to support us, and follow us on all social media platforms. IGD, your daily resource for insurgent proletarian life.